morning, everyone. As we've noted on this program many, many times over the last few months, a lot of takeaways from what's going on in the BP oil disaster. I mean, with the milestone that it's now exceeded the largest spill ever in the Gulf. That was actually a few weeks ago. There's a whole new class of detective work, though, to monitor what's going on.
Yeah, and you wouldn't think, I mean, you wouldn't imagine that you could trace oil anywhere. I mean, you wouldn't imagine that they have distinctive features.
There's the chemical composition of the oil. There's the nature of the tides. There's, ships moving in the Gulf. There's a whole new class of detective work, petrochemical forensics. So what would the TV show be here? GSI, Glopsine Investigation, something like that. It's a very serious deal, though. As we reported yesterday, oil has now hit the coast of every Gulf state, with ping-pongy-sized tar balls spattering the white sand beaches of the Lone Star State. Here's Jerry Patterson, Texas Land Commissioner, in a news conference yesterday.
The oil is from the BP spill. That is confirmed. It is BP oil from the Deepwater Horizon spill. The question is, how did it get here?
Well, how does Jerry Patterson answer that question, and how does he know the oil is from the BP spill? Larry McKinney is with us once again. He's the director of the Hart Research Institute for the Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M University at Corpus Christi. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
So tar balls have fingerprints. Are we talking chemical? Is it shape? Is it color? Is it what?
No,
email
it's
addresses?
No, right. No, it's a chemical. These oils are made up of thousands of different individual chemicals that are mixed together, plus contaminants like sulfur. And so depending on where the oil comes from, it has a different chemical composition that can be detected fairly easily.
So there's a distinctive chemical composition. What about the condition of the tar balls themselves? Jerry Patterson was talking yesterday about a certain weathering that took place, signs that it was battered in certain kinds of currents or maybe up against the hulls of ships.
Well, that's the normal process. When oil comes up from a leak or something like this, it goes through a whole series of stages of decomposition, really, and change is in reaction to ultraviolet light and being mixed with water and that type of thing. And over time, these changes occur, and we know about how long it takes this to happen. So you can get an idea of how long an oil has been in the water as a result of that.
So it's a little bit like carbon dating. You can see the deterioration and time it back to when it actually left the oil well.
Yeah, it's literally carbon dating because obviously it's carbon is a big component of the oil.
Now the changes you talk about, ultraviolet radiation, the changes in interacting with the water. Do some of these changes make the chemicals more toxic, and some of the changes make the chemicals less toxic?
No, it continues to decrease in toxicity the longer it weathers because the most toxic substances are the most volatile, most subject to evaporation. So over time, the what we would call the worst parts of that oil, the most toxic parts, will evaporate out. So that's the good thing about this type of thing.
Aside from the chemical composition, how do you chart the course of tar and oil pollution using simply the pattern of currents and seagoing vessels in the Gulf?
Well, in some oceans, it's relatively straightforward because there are very well-defined currents. The Gulf Stream, for example, we know a lot about it. But in this part of the Gulf, the currents are very much dominated by wind and that type of thing, tropical storms, for example, like hurricanes, and they change seasonally. So it's actually fairly difficult. But we do have models that take all this into account and can give you a prediction with some level of confidence of where the oil will go and how long it will take it to get there.
Now, as I look at maps of the Gulf, day after day on the news and also just trying to imagine if I would ever go down there on vacation until this is cleaned up, are there particular places that are more vulnerable or, there's this process in chemistry called chromatography where as something filters through a piece of paper, different chemicals sort of fall out. As you look around the Gulf, are there certain beaches that are going to get certain kinds of chemicals, certain kinds of tar balls, that sort of thing?
No, it's all dependent on time in the water and distance from the point of origin. That it's all about the same in that regard. The beaches are frankly, if we're going to have tar balls or oil hit anywhere on our coast, those beaches are frankly the best places for it to happen.
So beaches are the best because it's easier to clean them up?
Well, it's like the lesser of many evils, of course, but it is that one because it is much easier to clean up there, and also because the biodiversity, the life, the plants and animals are fairly uniform there, not like they are in wetlands where it's very complex.
So the big takeaway here is proximity is the problem. The closer you are to the deep water horizon, the more likely you are to have a multivariate set of problems, correct?
Yeah, you'll get more kinds of oil. Unfortunately, that's not good. The thing that you want to get, if you have to get anything, again, are these tarball types of things that are least toxic and easier to clean up.
So, Larry McKinney, can you imagine machines being developed based on this spill to deal with certain kinds of tarballs that can suck up the garbage on the beach, a technology that may be useful going forward in this century?
We haven't found much that works on beaches except the shovels and hands and plastic bags that you see now. So the best time to get out this oil is when it's in the water. And in that case, you can literally vacuum it up.
And finally, we had this report this morning that Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans has oil in it. First of all, have we traced that to Deepwater Horizon? And what does that say to you about the penetration of the oil upstream in the Mississippi River Basin?
Well, it's very disturbing because that means that oil is not only in Lake Pontchartrain, but all those wetlands between Lake Pontchartrain and the coast. And those are 40% of all the wetlands in the U.S. and some of the most productive that there are. So it's a very disturbing report.
So let's focus on that for a moment. I mean, that's a huge headline. If Lake Pontchartrain is kind of the canary in the coal mine here, if it gets polluted, that means the downstream and down bayou wetlands are even more threatened. What sorts of species is that going to threaten?
Well, basically all the seafood you and I eat, crabs, oysters, shrimp, everything, because over 20% of all the seafood that comes to the U.S. comes from these areas, and so it's a great concern.
And so Lake Pontchartrain is really an indication of the degradation of the whole variety of seafood breeding areas and fishing areas throughout the Gulf, correct?
Right. It's right at the top of those wetlands that are all so important to us.
Larry McKinney, you have a sad job, it seems to me.
Sometimes it's not, these days it's not very good. I have to admit, it's kind of a downer.
All right, Larry McKinney, thanks so much for being with us. He's director of the Hart Research Institute for Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. Tracing the chemical and otherwise fingerprints of tarballs coming from Deepwater Horizon dispersing themselves all throughout the Gulf. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.